to introduce Christine Z. With her choice on the topic this evening. Let's give her a warm welcome.
Definitely an addict. Can you guys understand in here?
Yes.
I'm pretty loud spoken, so I don't think it's going to be a problem here. I'm told I'm, see what I'm saying? I'll step back a little bit. So I'm told I'm the alternative speaker. I don't know if that means alternative to bingo, alternative lifestyle. But my sponsor was telling me yesterday, you know, alternative just means a choice. Like, and it really does, because you could say, well, I have this alternative or I have that alternative, right? But anyway, alternative lifestyle today tends to be referring to the LGBTQ community. So, and then I told my sponsor, I said, I don't really think that I'm in that community anymore because I'm not in my relationship anymore. And she said, yeah, she's like, I better not share at any hetero meetings anymore because if I'm not in a relationship. I love my sponsor. So anyway, you know, my head likes to complicate things. So I have a pretty good life today. I wasn't always gay or bisexual. I don't really like labels like that. I know some people sincerely subscribe to one or the other. I think I just love people, you know, and I think that I fall in love with soul, you know, I fall in love with who I see somebody to be. So, and I choose those words carefully because who I choose to see somebody as and who they really are, not usually the same thing. So I have a pretty good life today. You know, I work steps. I'm on a ninth step right now. I have a home group, Saturday matinee. We meet outside 3 p.m. on Saturdays. I have a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for 20 years. I'm of service. I'm the GSR for my home group, and I just stepped up as I think I'm going to chair the women's retreat again, if they let me, for next year. I think we're going to be okay by that time to do that. And I just volunteered for RCM2 for West Valley. So my sponsor told me I needed to pick up a couple more service commitments because I was obsessing a little bit too much. But I got to tell you guys, you know, a lot of times this service commitments and employment, they interfere with my obsessing. I feel like I need more time to obsess. But anyway, I follow suggestions today. So that's what she told me to do, so that's what I did. She told me I need to pick up another sponsee or two. So I'm looking for that. I have one sponsee. I'm blessed. Been walking her through the steps, and it's definitely a gift to give this to somebody else, for sure. I have some peace today. You know, when I'm using, I am on a self-destructive trajectory. I am full of fear and anger and self-loathing. And I try to use something outside of myself to change the way that I feel. And I've had this disease for a long time. And I know that drugs is what gets us here, you know, and I'm grateful that we all have that to identify with. But I've come to learn that this disease that the drugs are a symptom, you know, and it's a much, much broader disease than just using drugs. And I think I had my disease from, you know, I don't know if I was born with it. I do have the genes in my family, but I would say I definitely started picking it up around 3 or 4. And my first drug was control. Controlling other people. I felt extremely out of control in my home. I felt that my environment was very unpredictable, and I wanted some sort of control in a very scary environment. And so I started to try to control people. And my home was, there was no affection. I was physically abused, and it's taken me a long time to own that. I've minimized it over the years. And I was emotionally abused, and I was emotionally neglected. Physically, I was very well. Did I do something wrong? It's always about me. Okay. Physically, I was very well provided for. If you were to look at things from the outside, you know, I was probably one of the best dressed kids at school. I had this beautiful bedroom set. I was the first kid with an Atari. I got to go to England and Florida and Disney World and all these things that other kids didn't get to do. But inside, I felt unlovable, and I felt like a bad person. I had a lot of shame. You know, and a lot of that came from the abuse that I endured. And, you know, being told things like, you know, you are despisable. I didn't even know what that meant the first time that I was told that. I figured it out a few years later. Anyway, just not a less than enduring environment, less than, what do you call it, nurturing environment. And what that did is it gave me a lot of shame. And I didn't even know that I had shame until about a year ago. And I've been around this program since 2000. I haven't stayed clean since 2000, but I've been in some semblance of recovery for, you know, many years. And I didn't know that I had shame. I thought shame was embarrassed. Like, I'm embarrassed. I don't feel embarrassed. But I carried a lot of shame from my parents' shameless behavior. So, and that's where my feelings of low self-worth, low self-esteem, and just feeling not good enough, you know, came from. I learned that. And I didn't learn how to self-nurture because I wasn't nurtured myself. And so that whole thing, you know, probably some of the genes and the environment set me up, you know, put me on the road to become an addict. So I started controlling friends. I was very controlling. I should move that, huh? Why don't you guys say something? And, you know, and I could be kind of mean, really. Like, when I was 10, I remember my Nana came over from England, and I chased her around the house with a knife. She's 4 feet tall. And a little Italian lady. And, you know, and I wasn't going to hurt her with it, but I liked that control. I liked the control that I could make it stop anytime I wanted. I just wasn't ready yet. And if you came over to play with me, I might hide until you cried, and then I'd come out. So it was very manipulative, and I wanted control desperately. I thought for a long time, because I did those things, that I was a bad person, but now I know differently. You know, I was coping the best way that I could. In an unhealthy environment. So as I got older, You know, I started seeking love. I started fixing with other things, like sex, boyfriends. I really wanted love, and you know, of course, the guys that I picked were not healthy. I'm gonna take this off because I'm getting a little heated. And by now, the COVID virus that was up here from you guys speaking has fallen to the floor. So, a little bit of a germaphobe. So anyway, I, you know, went down this path of, you know, I started using when I was, I think I was like 11 the first time I used, and I used to get plastered. I that was the intent. And then I went to school like that, and I vomited all over the nurse's office, swearing to God I hadn't been drinking, you know. And the whole bathroom just reeked of, what was it, Southern Comfort or some shit like that. It was disgusting. I drank a whole tumbler, and I was like 90-something pounds, you know. So that was, I think, my first experience. I was smoking cigarettes and acting out all over the place. I was very problematic in school. You know, in grade school, always acting out, class clown, you know, and now when I look back, like, I can see why I was doing that. Like, I was so unsettled in my soul, and I was always, like, out here looking for something else, you know, to make me feel happy, and had two unplanned pregnancies by the time I was 17. By the time I was 18, I had been in two physically abusive relationships, because I didn't, I mean, like, now when I look back, of course, right, I could see why I ended up in those relationships. I had no self-esteem, and so I attracted people. Well, and then also I picked fixer-uppers. Like, I love fixer-uppers, and so, you know, I started a fire in high school. They didn't like that, and I had to get this whole psychiatric workup done, and I really wasn't trying to burn the school down. I was just having some fun, right? It was like wild and crazy, and we were laughing, and I set the paper, toilet paper on fire, and we weren't running out, and somebody snitched me out. So I got expelled from all Akron public schools, not just one. But, yeah, so I was a little bit of a troublemaker, and by the time I was 18, man, I was knee-deep in a lot of drug use and going down a very, you know, not-so-good path. And so I decided to join the Air Force, and I thought, you know, if I could get away from you guys, I could probably, you know, make something of myself. Because you guys were the problem. And I knew that if I continued, like if I tried to succeed in Akron, I wouldn't make it because I was so enmeshed with the people I was hanging out with and the drugs I was doing. I never would have made it. So I joined the Air Force and put my disease in the suitcase as I was packing, brought it with me. And, you know, and it wasn't long before I was pregnant again. And using again. And, you know, and this disease is crazy, right? Because I used every day on active duty, and it wasn't alcohol. I used every day. And the reason I say it wasn't alcohol is because I would have got away with that. The point that I'm trying to make is that I used something illegal every day, knowing every day I could have to go drop. And I kept doing it. And that is the definition of addiction. Is, you know, continuing to use despite, you know, consequences or the possibility of consequences. And then I got married because I was pregnant. And I, you know, I married somebody who I got close with. And then when things started progressing, he pulled out. And all my flags went up, right? Because If you are not interested in me, I've got to figure out why, and it becomes a conquest for me, a challenge. Like, I have to make you love me, and it's this dad thing again, right? It's my dad, and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, why he didn't love me the way that I felt like I needed to be loved. And so I married this man because once I got pregnant and he came back to me, I thought, now I gotcha, you know. And so I was able to, so what I've come to learn in recovery is that what I've had is other esteem. And other esteem is, you know, was based on how well I succeeded in my career, how much money I made, my children, being a mother, being a wife, and never really about who I was as a person. I didn't even know who I was as a person. And as I went along in my life, I was really blind to the fact that I really didn't even know myself. And this man that I married, I really wasn't even in love with. And I was scared because I was pregnant. I didn't want to do it alone. And I felt like it was the final, you know, the, wow, I can actually, you know, now I gotcha kind of thing. And so I stayed married for 18 years. And again, I started using again. And I was on active duty still. And again, using every single day. You know, I would go on base, and I remember one time I was in the stall, and I couldn't make it work because the fucking toilet paper thing was round. I hated that. Like, the thing on top was round. Like, I can't work with that. So I'm like, damn it. So I had to go out into the sink area where, you know, there's like the main area there where people come in and, you know, fix their hair or whatever, and I lined it up on the thing above the sink on base. In a bathroom, anybody could have walked in. I brought drugs on a base. Any day, they could have had the dogs at the gate. They did it frequently. And that's how insane I am when I'm using. I used to drive down the 101, and I'd have I'd be trying to light it. Like, I'd have one knee on the steering wheel and one on the gas, and I'm trying to, you know. And anybody could have passed me on the freeway, a colonel or anybody, like, on their way to work, going the same place I was. And it was just insanity. And I got clean that time because my husband did, and I didn't want to be left behind. And one of my biggest character defects that I've come to be aware of is codependency. That's why I control others. It's because I try to live vicariously through you, because I don't have my own sense of a life. And so, you know, I found myself unhappy in my marriage, and I was pretty angry that my husband wouldn't be who I needed him to be. I wanted him to change, and he wasn't changing. And so I got really pissed off. And I felt unloved and unappreciated, and so I met a girl, a newcomer, and I was actually sponsoring her. And I started to develop feelings for her, and I thought, man, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. I know it's funny, but I'm telling you, I was just like, wow, this is it. Like, she's everything that I've ever wanted. And, you know, like, I'm finally like, oh my God, I finally have this person. And the person that I was looking for was that parent who was going to nurture me and love me unconditionally. And that is not going to be found today for me, because that time period is over. And so what I've come to learn in recovery is I have to do that for myself. So I have a small child in me. Some of you may have done child work, and some of you might think it's really kooky, but so I'm having to nurture that child now. And give myself the things that I didn't get growing up. And it's very challenging, I will tell you. So anyway, I stayed with this girl for about, I guess it's been about 11 years. And, you know, she didn't stay clean. Big surprise, right? And I had the damnedest time letting go. The damnedest time. Like, she's been using for the last 4 to 5 years, and I just left a couple months ago. I couldn't let it go. And I'll tell you, I have struggled with the idea that I am not more important than her disease. And I was just talking to my sponsor about it yesterday, and she's like, Christine, you got it all twisted. You got to quit feeling like, you know, because I'm like, I'm not coming second anymore to anybody's fucking bottle of booze. Or she's like, you got to quit thinking about it like that. You're not second. She's stuck. She's in her disease. It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with love, you know. And so it's like for the first time in my life, I'm succumbing. I'm like, damn it. I can't make this person love me. Which is actually my disease talking. She loves me just fine. She just doesn't love herself. Anyway, I guess that's what qualified me to come here and talk tonight, is that relationship. And, man, it's been painful. And I'll tell you what started happening for me. The first time she disappeared was I started having flashbacks to childhood, crying, saying, if you love me, why are you hurting me? And nobody has brought that up for me before. So I know that there was some definite family of origin shit there. And like I told you, I mean, I thought this was the person that was going to love me unconditionally, right? This was the fix. This was the key to my happiness. I was finally, finally loved, right? And so it's really been a difficult process for me. And I took it really personal when she left. I was devastated. And I kept trying to figure out, why did she fall out of love with me? Like, what the fuck is going on, you know? And I just couldn't wrap my head around that it had nothing to do with me. And in that time period, I relapsed. And I didn't want to feel what I was going through. And my relapse actually started when I stepped out of my marriage because I had become intolerant and indifferent towards spiritual principles. I was pissed off, and I was acting out. And, you know, and then pretty soon I was smoking again, and then there was some free samples at work of a medication. And so it was just as simple as that one day. I was sitting at work, and there they were, and I just chucked them down my throat, and I thought, right as I was doing it, I'm like, do you realize what you're doing? And I did it anyway. And I lived a double life for a couple years in Narcotics Anonymous. I picked up key tags dirty. I worked steps dirty. I did service dirty. I sponsored people dirty. I went over step work with sponsees dirty, and I am not proud of that. But if you've done something like that, you're not alone. And that's why I'm sharing it. You know, this disease, that's the way this disease is. I didn't want to lose my life. You know, I just needed something to help with the pain. Because I was in this intense amount of pain. And I just needed something to help me through. And, you know, before long, I was drinking, and I was, you know, I'm kind of a pharmacy tech with my drug use. I like to add this and this and a little bit of that. It's like a little chef with a recipe, you know, just trying to get just the right buzz. And then I got, you know, they have that marijuana card thing you could get. That was like, marijuana was my favorite. I mean, I like them all, but marijuana was like my favorite. And when I got that card, man, it was on. And I also want to tell you that I took meds from patients. They would tell me, you know, hey, this medicine's not working. I need something stronger. I'd say, okay, bring me in the ones you got. I'll write you another script for something stronger. And I took my dog's tramadols. My dog was on pain medication and started taking his stuff. And no, that's terrible. You guys are probably going to hate me. I still gave some to the dog, but I got a little extra for myself. And I would use at night initially, and I would still go to work in the morning, and I would still do my meetings and all that stuff. But then what happened was it got to where, like it always does, I had to use all the time. I couldn't stand being awake and not being high. And I would go to work high, and here we are again with insanity, right? I'm sitting at my desk, and the other provider is sitting at her desk, and I have one of those vapes, right? And I take a hit of it over here at the side, and I'm blowing it out, and then as I blow them out, I see she's looking at me. I'm like, oh, fuck. And she probably was just like, I didn't just see someone coming out of her mouth. But that's how insane I get. I can't stop. I have to do it all the time. And that's why I'm here in this program. So the weirdest thing happened. I lost my job. My boss came to me and he said, Christine, he said, I'm selling the practice. And he said, I'm selling it to a nurse practitioner and she doesn't want any PAs. She doesn't want any physician oversight. So you're going to have to find out a job. And I got 2 weeks' notice, and it was December 5th, I think. I was not happy. And, you know, really, I believe that was my higher power working in my life, because I would not be clean today if it wasn't for that. So I feverishly started looking for a job, and I landed one with a pain clinic. And my sponsor's like, do you think that's the best place for you? Oh, and I couldn't pee clean. I was obsessed with drug testing myself every day. It was taking forever to get that shit out of my system. And, oh, my God, it was terrible. I thought, so they were like, okay, you're hired. You know, when can you start? And I'm like, okay, I can start this date. Blah, blah, everything's great, right? Okay, got another job. And then they're like, and I got an email and it said, oh, and we need you to drop a urine. That's a problem. So I made up the story. I'm like, look, some of it was true, but I told my mom's sister is dying of ovarian cancer. I have to go to England. I can't go to work for you right now because I needed to buy some time. Like I needed like 6 weeks, I think, maybe nine. I don't know. But they were like, okay, no problem. And then when I came back, you know, I just told him I wasn't going to take that job. And then this weirdest thing happened, you guys. I couldn't get another job because of these circumstances of the student loan repayment I was doing. I had to work for a federally qualified health center. And I didn't land a job for 5 months. I thought I was going to come out of my fucking skin. I didn't know how I was going to make it. And so there was my other esteem, right? My work, I felt okay about myself because of my work. And when I lost that, and it jacked me up. But the beautiful thing was, my God gave me 5 months to work on my recovery and learning how to live clean. And so I went to meetings every day. I called my sponsor every day. Bless her heart. It just so happened, like, when I got clean, she was like, you know, in the middle of, she had some time off work or something, I don't remember, but, and so that 5 months was a blessing. I got to go with my mom to see her sister that was dying, there was some truth in that, and I got to go to England and Ireland for 3 weeks, and be there with my mom, you know, for her sister, and so, you know, Lisa's left a couple more times, and, the second time she left, I started doing some work on myself and my codependency and sorting through how I could, I saw that I needed to create a life of my own. And so I started trying to figure out, like, what do I need to have a happy life, despite who's around? Like, what does Christine want? I don't even know what my favorite color is. Do you guys know what your favorite color is? I don't really have one. So I've been working on that, working steps. And thank God when she just left this last time, like 3 months ago, she keeps disappearing. I don't understand. You know, I had enough recovery that it hasn't been so bad. And I've continued on with the work. You know, I've got like a little garden at home. I'm growing like some tomatoes and some jalapenos and squash and zucchini and all kinds of cool stuff. And like, I really like doing that. And I have this RV, and so I've been kind of going with my dogs and take my dogs. I love to camp. I'm kind of planning out my next year. I have some surgeries I have to have. I have BRCA 2. I have high risk for breast and ovarian cancer. So I have a couple surgeries I have to have that'll take my risk of getting breast cancer from 80% down to less than 1. So I'm going to be doing that this year. And my sponsor's already asked me. She's like, all right, what's your plan with the pain pills? So I've already told my surgeon that I'm an addict, and that I'd really rather do it without pain pills if I can. And she thinks I'm going to be able to do it with just some Tylenol and Motrin. So I'm hoping for that, and maybe just not even go there. Looking at where I want to travel to. I have an amazing career today. And the cool thing was, is like, how much time do I have? This job that I was in really wasn't good for me. That one that I was telling you about that I lost. I got 2 weeks a year of vacation. He didn't run the company like I thought they should. I was quite passive aggressive in my attempts to get him to change. Again, another common theme for me. This job that I have now, man, I love it. Their values are in line with mine. I get to work with underprivileged, underserved populations. I get 6 weeks off a year, 10 paid holidays. I like the structure of the organization. It's a big organization, so it's a lot like the military. Like, there's a clear chain of command, and I like that. I have a great supervising physician. I love what I do. I'm actually, probably for the first time in my career, I'm able to attend to patients, which means I'm holding space for them. I'm actually listening, and I'm attending to them, and I'm forgetting everything else that's going on, and I'm there with them for those few minutes. And I've gotten some really amazing feedback from people, like, that they feel like I listen to them, you know, and it's really cool because I do. So I'm very blessed that I get to help people. I just got certified to treat addiction, and so that's, you know, another way that I'm going to be able to help the community. I get to sponsor people. I mean, I just volunteered for this. They want people to give COVID vaccines. And I just filled out the online application to do that. And I'm so excited about that because I'm being a part of history. Like I will have played a part in that. And I love that. You know, I love helping people. And I've treated, you know, a few COVID patients, and I've certainly tested probably over 1,000. You know, I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. It drives me nuts when I look out and see people with no mask on, but I'm working on that. I gotta let go of my control issues. You know, I had to make a decision about coming here. I wouldn't have come here. I don't really go anywhere right now. I get curbside pickup for my groceries. I wear a mask everywhere. If I walk in a store and people don't have a mask on, I turn around and walk out. I committed to this back when the numbers were going down. I thought, okay, you know, I can do that. It's a calculated risk estimate. And then shit started hitting the fan again. And I'm like, fuck. But I didn't want to cancel. You know, I felt pretty bad for this committee. I knew a little bit about the circumstances, and they were able to cancel the convention because the you know, this casino or whatever wasn't going to honor what the rest of the hotels are doing, you know, postponing and all that. And so they're kind of in a shitty position, and I don't want to add to that, you know. So I'm here, and I'm taking a risk, and pretty much in my hotel room, other than coming here for this, and I went to one workshop earlier. But I'm really, really grateful to be clean, and I'm fucking lucky to be clean. I have lost a lot of people. One of my sponsees, Melissa Calise, you guys might know her, she died from this disease, and she was like one of my best friends. Addiction, not COVID. And man, I fucking love that girl. And we did everything together. And my cousin just died last week from a drug overdose. You know, I told you about my partner, that, you know, my ex that's out using. I got another really close friend of mine that's using. I just found out a couple days ago a girl that I served with in the Air Force that was in the fellowship. She was found a couple days ago. Her mom found her. So I'm lucky, man, because a lot of people that relapse don't make it back. And I'll tell you what I had to do is I was there when Melissa relapsed and I was clean. And I told her when she relapsed, she'd come back and she'd say, oh, I only have 60 days. I'm not getting up at the clean time countdown. And I used to tell her, you value every day that you have. It doesn't matter what you had before. Every day that you have, you have to value it, because if you don't, after a relapse especially, you will go back out, because it's very easy to say, what's 30 days? I had 14 years. You know, what's 60 days? I'll just go use and then I'll come back and start over again, right? And so I had to take my own medicine when I relapsed. And when my disease would tell me, what's the big deal, Christine? You only have a month. You had 14 years. I'd say, no, I have to value every day that I have. And it worked. It worked, you know. So, a lot of people don't make it back. And I'm coming up on, I'll have 3 years on December 22nd, God willing. And, you know, I just, I feel so, you know, sometimes I have a little bit of survivor guilt, you know, especially around Melissa. You know, because I'm here and she's not. And I don't know why some people don't get this. I don't know why I get to. Like, there's not really anything that special about me that I should, you know, have all the gifts that I have in my life and somebody else doesn't. I don't know why any of us sitting here are here. But we're here in this moment in time, and we're clean, and we want to stay clean. And, you know, when I look at the people that are close to me that have died or that are still using, man, that's a miracle. An addict that wants to stop using is a miracle. You know, an addict with one day clean is a miracle. I mean, that's like crazy. We shouldn't be clean, you know, but because we have each other, we're able to empathize and we're able to support each other and understand each other like nobody else can. You know, so it's pretty cool. But that's all I got. I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Taking apart.
Thank you.
Taking apart.